Duncan MacLeod, and this is Tech Central. Now, I'm sure by now most people who watch or listen to this podcast would be aware, at least tangentially, that South Africa is getting a new standard for electrical sockets and plugs. The question is why, and what does it mean in practice? To answer these questions, Gianfranco Campetti joins me now via a video call. Gian, thanks so much for making the time and for talking to Tech Central today.
Hi, it's a pleasure. Hello to all the viewers.
Now, Jean, you've been involved in some way in standards setting at the South African Bureau of Standards around electrical sockets and plugs for many years now. What is your role at the SABS, and what is your day job? And maybe give us a bit of detail about your background. I presume your history is in electrical engineering.
I've been in product design development through various companies for my whole career, mainly wiring accessories, which include circuit breakers right down to the plugs and sockets into your home. So during the course of my career, of course, you come face to face with standards, and it's always a challenge to design something around a standard which really doesn't give you any formulas. It just tells you what it must or mustn't do. So I've been involved with various technical committees, which there are several at SABS in the standards division. It's the only division in SABS that is funded by government, and that is the standards body of South Africa. So they have several technical committees that cover the different aspects of electrical. We're only talking electrical here. Obviously, there are others.
Sure.
So the particular one, SC67, covers plugs and sockets, cord extension sets, adapters, and that all those products. This committee meets once a year. There are several stakeholders, some from government, some from many from industry, and they have working groups. So the various standards, especially the ones that require maintenance. Sorry, if we just take a step back, South
Sure.
Africa stopped developing their own standards also many years ago, back in the 80s, where they somehow took a decision with a view to the new South Africa that was imminent to adopt international standards and not have homegrown standards, which might be a roadblock going forward into Africa.
Okay.
So that was a wise decision. They had been working with the IEC for many years prior to that, in any case, so it was an easy transition. So the ball started to roll to IEC, to adopt IEC standards for all those local standards that were in South Africa at the time, notably circuit breakers, wire and cable, and of course plugs and sockets. So the IEC world, which is throughout the world really, that's not the only standard. They have a parent standard that covers all plugs and sockets. And it's all the general requirements, all the tests, all the physical and electrical requirements. Then, in addition, every country has got their own what they call standard sheets, which define the plug configuration, the pin configuration.
Right.
So all countries, mostly all countries, I would say there's, oh God, there must be about 150, 160 different configurations for different countries that describe different positions of plug pins and socket holes. And South Africa was no different. So fortunately, we had for a long time prior to 86 a standard which was derived from the British, and it's in fact this big round pin, what we call 164 part one. It also has a little brother, which is 164 part two, three,
Oh,
sorry, beg your pardon.
I've seen that smaller one. In fact, I have sockets for that smaller one at home, and I've always wondered what on earth are these for?
Yes, now in those days, now this is very popular in India, by the way. So
Yes.
most power plugs in India are this is a 6 amp plug, this is a 16 amp plug. So most plugs in India are little plugs like this. We've stopped using them as a power plug. We use it for lighting now. So it's like a dedicated plug so that you can conveniently plug in light circuits and not have to disconnect them if you have to replace a whole luminaire. So they normally come as a pre-wired assembly. If you can imagine that on that, I don't have a sample, but it comes as a pre-wired assembly and that fits into a luminaire. So getting back to the standards, so South Africa started slowly putting an IEC spin on all their standards. And, in the 60s, Britain went over to the flat pin plug, this one here, and South Africa had an opportunity at that time to follow suit. But fortunately, they sort of hung back and said, no, wait a minute, we're not going to be in bed with these guys forever. Mm. And they never adopted this.
So you say, fortunately, we didn't adopt that. Why fortunately?
Well, because, it's a very expensive plug. And also it includes a fuse. Now, in South Africa, fuses were kicked out also many years ago, back in the 50s, maybe even earlier, I'm not sure. But if you ever saw some of the old houses, they used to have a fuse box, no circuit breakers. So that was a big change in South Africa because people were funny, if a fuse blew and they didn't have a replacement, they just stuck anything in there, any wire, silver paper, So it was not a very safe way of doing things. Now, the UK, who obviously are probably a bit, they're different to us for sure, they have a little fuse in each plug. So although you have ring circuits, which are 13 amp, each plug has got its own little fuse. So if you've got a short on this particular circuit, that fuse blows and bingo, the rest of the installation remains active. Okay. You obviously go out, you buy a little fuse, you pop it in there and you up and running. So we didn't do that. We stuck to our system. And also around about the same time, our wiring code also, which is another technical committee that has a working group that also meets almost on a monthly basis. As you can imagine, wiring up an installation, things change regularly. You have new components, new methods. So also back in the same time, we introduced earth leakage protection in all our sockets.
Okay.
So it started off as earth leakage protection for the whole installation. They found that was a bit too much and it was prone to nuisance tripping. So it slowly evolved only to socket outlets. And that's why, one of the reasons why the earth shooker. Now, we've got a very similar system, which is the 164 part 6, which doesn't have the earth. You'll see that the earth shooker has got an earth on the outside.
Yes.
So the socket, which unfortunately I don't have a sample yet, has got two prongs that touch that earth. Now, those are exposed. So it's relatively simple to figure out that someone could actually damage those earth prongs, and therefore you would damage the earth leakage protection. So this plug in South Africa was banned a long time ago.
That's a shooker. That's a German plug standard.
That's the German shooker, yes.
I still see that plug in South Africa today.
Well, it's not allowed. It's not allowed. You cannot get an LOA. There's a NRCS Act that says you're only allowed to sell, display. You can't even give it away. It has to be one of the 164 series. So this particular plug, the one that's earthed, is not allowed in South Africa, neither the plug nor the socket.
Interesting. I do have some appliances here from, it may have been from computer equipment that I bought when I was abroad rather than stuff that I bought in the last few years. Finding an adapter for those Schuko plugs is almost impossible because they don't fit into the adapters. Exactly. And I presume that's done deliberately to prevent you from using the Schuko plug in South Africa.
Well, yes, because we don't have the standard yet, so we would not have allowed an adapter to accommodate it. Although there are companies that do make sockets for this, but it's for the export market.
Okay.
So if you ask around, you'll probably find a module that will accommodate this plug. Hmm. Now, why I say this is that, we are still part of the world, so we can ban whatever you like, but I can assure you it all works. It all comes in. And especially like when we had the World Cup in 2010, all the media from the rest of the world, they all had these plugs. So you can imagine they get to Moses Mabhida Stadium and there they can't plug their stuff. So guess what happened? They just brought out adapters, cut the plugs off, put a South African plug, and they plugged all the equipment in. Now, there's no way NRCS would have stopped it. They couldn't stop it.
Yes.
You also find that some hotels use it. How they get around it, I don't know. Because, you know, every installation has got to have a certificate of compliance, which basically ticks all the boxes in terms of safety, what you've installed, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. So, look, it's a bit of a cheat. I don't want to, you know, put a hand in it. It's just not allowed in South Africa.
Let's take a step back, though, Jean. Why does every country have its own standard just about? And wasn't there an attempt many decades ago to create an international standard for electrical plugs and sockets? And
oh, yes.
It's so frustrating as a person who travels fairly often. It's so frustrating to have to carry all these universal adapters around to be able to connect my laptop wherever I go. And it's a bane of international travelers' life. Why don't we have one standard?
Well, look, I think the same question applies. Why do you have different languages? Why do you have different rules? Why do you have different markets? I think it's a national identity issue. It's a flag. A lot of countries, because it's a relatively simple product to produce, a lot of countries have invested in tooling, and obviously they had choices that go back many years. Also, you know, most countries, including us, we're very reluctant to change. You know, once you've got something, you kind of hang on to it, you know, for dear life.
Yeah.
That's the basic, you know, there is no clear formula that says northern countries will do this, southern will do that. There is no such clear formula.
Yes.
Except that where you had originally the so-called empires, you know, that grabbed land in Africa, South America, they, of course, would have brought their skill and knowledge. So you find that in South America, you've got Chuco plugs. You know, you find that in South Africa, we've got both the Anglophone and the Francophone plugs. We've got Italian plugs. We've got, you know, no South African plugs. You know, they really avoid using that. So that's kind of part of the history. And to your other question, you know, yeah, just after the war, the IEC started gaining ground. You know, Europe was flattened.
Yeah.
And it seemed
after a good idea. World War I or World War II?
World War II.
Okay.
After World War II in the 40s, late 40s, early 50s, the IEC committees that were prevalent in Europe at the time, destroyed Europe, they thought it a good idea to come up with a so-called worldwide plug and socket standard.
Mm.
And we were seduced into believing that that would be quite a good thing for South Africa, because we were also looking at going into a continent that we were enemies with.
Yes.
So it would have been a relatively easy thing to go into the continent with an international plug and socket.
Mm.
And that, I think, was the main thinking and strategy behind the SABS at the time. Well, in 86, out came the standard. It's IEC 60906-1, and it basically looked like that. You know, it looked exactly like that. But it was exactly like that, the 164 Part 2.
Yes.
So we adopted it. We were the first country to adopt it. There was word that either Finland or Norway were going to adopt it, but I think they chickened out. They just at the last minute thought, no, we're not going to do this. They only have 4 million people living there. Why would they go through this trouble?
Mm-hmm.
So, however, the standard was flawed. And shortly after that, that's where I got involved, because my company at the time said, well, let's make this. And I said, yeah, well, that's great. But, you know, the standard's incomplete. So that's how I got involved in the international work group. And I must tell you, it took me like 3-4 years to then discover that there was no way that Europe was going to fix that standard. There was just no way.
Right.
Because then it would have been forced by the EU to adopt it.
Yes.
So there again, it demonstrates how countries hang on to their historical plug and sockets. It's like almost like a religion.
Yes.
You know, it's unheard of. Now, one good thing has happened in Europe, though. The pin spacing, live and neutral pin spacing, is 19 millimeters. So you will find that our 164 Part 5, which is one of the most popular plugs here in terms of cell phone chargers and small appliances,
yeah,
that'll fit easily in a Swiss socket, which looks very similar to this. It'll fit nicely in there, and it'll fit nicely in the Schuko socket. It'll fit in everywhere. But it's a class 2 plug. In other words, it doesn't need an earth. Yes. So now if you needed an earth, then now you've got Schuko plugs with the earth that sticks out of the socket. You've got the German one that's grabbed on the side. The Italians are all in a row. So that's where the problem starts.
Right. So the SANS standard 164 part 2 is specifically dealing with the earth 3-pin sockets.
Yes. Yes. It replaces this. It actually is a straight replacement. Mm-hmm. So this is 16 amp 3-pin. This is 16 amp 3-pin. You wonder why these pins are so small? Well, because these are so flipping large. You know, I mean, the British, when they designed this is like a 25 amp plug, you know. So never mind 16 amps. So this plug works very well at 16 amps. It stays within the temperature rise. It's a lot smaller, so you can fit more into a socket outlet such as this. You can put 3. In fact, you don't have to have switches in South Africa. You could have 6 of these. Now that's a big step forward. And the other big step forward is that you can fit the 2-pin plug in the same outlet. So you don't need this adapter.
Yes.
Which were several of these adapters. They looked something like this.
I've got them all over my house, all over my office.
Yeah, well, there you know. Now you know. Now, this adapter was ubiquitous 10, 15 years ago. Yep. It didn't have the little skirts, and it didn't have the 3 holes. Well, it still doesn't have. This one is a 2-hole one. But lately, it's been replaced by adapters that look like this.
Yeah.
So. The value of these adapters, of course, well, it's only to fit the 2-pin plug.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so, you know, many times I get asked, well, why doesn't South Africa just ban this? Well, it's quite simple. You know, there are millions of these plugs in our market. There are millions of sockets in all our dwellings and offices and factories. And you can imagine the cost of having to replace all of this.
Mm.
And that's the reason why the wiring code in 2018 or 2017 issued the first clause that says all new buildings will have one of these sockets, the 164 part 2.
Okay.
Can
you still install the larger, older standard?
Oh, yeah, of course, because you still have got plugs. So during that time and a little bit before it, you had a lot of products that came on the market that had both.
Yes.
So if people wanted to fit the new socket, they had a huge choice. And you could virtually go to any DIY store, you could buy it, and obviously you should ask your contractor to then replace it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 3 wires. It's 3 wires at the back. So, you know, it's not a, there's no different technology in here.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to this, you have the pictures behind you. There's been a lot of sockets that come out with USBs. So that again does away with another charger, which is also essentially an adapter. And you can basically have one on your side of the bed, your wife's side of the bed, and the kids, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can charge all your phones and your tablets and stuff like that.
Yeah, interesting. I was going to ask about the USB charging. I see in the pictures behind me, we've got both USB, I think it's USB-C.
A, USB A and C.
And USB-C.
Points.
I know that cell phone companies are putting out different types of chargers these days. You get what they call super fast charging or super charging. I think my phone has a super charging plug that, or a, not a plug, what do you call the bit that...
A charger.
Can charge my phone to full in less than an hour. I presume that the USB ports on these sockets will not be producing similar sort of output.
Yeah, well, look, if you look on the spec of the USB, you will see that it'll say USB and then something A, 2.1 amp is about the most common.
Yes.
Now, a super fast charger can pump out 5 amps, 6 amps, and there's quite a bit of intelligence. So your phone charger, obviously you don't want to throw that away, or your tablet charger, because it's got intelligence. So it checks what the USB outlet can give you and then adjusts the current to the maximum that it can get.
Right.
So, yeah, look, there's moves to go to 10 amp, 20 amp. I mean, look, there's a move in some country to do away with power sockets. and just have USBs. You know, you could have almost, if you can get the current, you could have a washing machine with a USB. You could have, you know, so these are the modern things guys that are playing with.
Mm.
Now you can imagine, you know, if your house is only basically a 12 volt outlet, you've got ultimate safety.
Yes.
Nobody will ever get electrocuted, not even if you stick your tongue in the outlet. So I mean, you know, this is changing all the time. We just hold our breath to see, well, wow, what's going to happen next, you know?
Yeah.
But look, I think it's all positive. You'll find that if you plug your phone in there and your phone could charge in 2 hours, this might take four.
Yes.
So but then you have to sleep at night, so your phone is charging. Who cares? You know, it just...
You're not going to damage your phone. It's not going to push out.
No.
So it'll be a source of electricity.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. So in new buildings, are we seeing these USB components being rolled out as standard as well?
Well, not in new. Well, I haven't seen them because really it's a homeowner's choice. There's nothing in the wiring code that says you can't.
Right.
So there's no safety requirements. It's a low voltage device. We were at some times worried that, you know, you've got a 220 volt device next to a 5 amp a DC device, you know, 6 amp or 12 amp. Mm. And, you know, could there be some interaction or could you, but it's a complete floating supply. So there's no earth to that USB. So it's a completely floating supply.
And is it fairly trivial to put in these new sockets yourself, or would you advise getting an electrician in to do it?
Look, the thing is, you know, you should follow the rules. Mm. You know, you can drive on the other side of the road. I mean, and you might never get killed, but the rules are you stick to the left. Now, the EIR, the electrical installation regulations, dictate that in your home, you use a qualified, a registered contractor to do any electrical work. Sure. And he will amend your COC or issue you another one.
Mm-hmm.
So, the only danger is, of course, if you connect it wrong, mm-hmm. then you could have, when you think it's off, it's actually on, or where you think the live is, in other words, where your appliance has got a switch, the switch is switching the neutral and not the live. So, you've got live going right through to your appliance, right up to the switch.
Yeah. So unless you know
through the motor, through the heater, right up to the switch.
Yeah. So unless you know absolutely what you're doing, rather getting
I don't want to say, I don't want to get kicked off the technical committee.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, that's the rule. The rules is you do electrical work, you have to be qualified and registered.
Okay. All right. Now, Jean, take us through what SANS 164. So the
is that okay? You got that? Is that okay?
Clear, absolutely clear. So
good.
The previous standard was 164 part one, was it?
No. So 164 part zero,
covers
all the socket outlets. It looks like this. It says general requirements. And then when you open it up, it'll say that, look, this covers all the configurations from 164 part one right through to six. So if you want to go through them, I'll go through them. But this standard doesn't cover the requirements of each of those. It just says, look, there's a document that covers the requirements for 164 part one and 164 part two, et cetera, et cetera. But where there are common requirements, it then puts them in 164 part zero. That saves having to duplicate it in all the other documents. And I'll give you an example. The latest one that happened in June was that, or that everybody noticed, is that we have a thing to do with the switching of socket outlets. I don't know if you can see that, but I'll hold up a card just now. So it's got a clause that says, look, if you have a socket outlet with switches, you just got to be careful of what the switch does. So I don't know if that is clear. So you can have an unswitched socket. That's allowed. In other words, you just plug in and out. You don't have to switch on and off. But where you do have a switch, you must switch either the whole thing off or the group of sockets off or each individual socket.
Mm.
So that's the key here. And that sort of flummoxed a lot of people. This was serious because we actually had a fatality here where someone was working in a roof space, asked the wife to switch off. It happened to be one of these socket outlets that, like this one, that has got one switch, and but then it's got unswitched as well. So she probably, it was, I don't say it was this socket out, but she probably switched the switch off. He was plugged in here, and bingo, whatever he was doing caused a fatality. So that's where that came from. That's where we decided, okay, we'll put in a little clause that just defines how you switch your socket outlets if they have a switch.
Okay.
And don't have to have it, but then there must be no switches.
Okay.
Except for USBs.
So maybe, Jean, take us through the advantages that 164 Part 2 brings to the table. What from a safety perspective and other aspects, what does it do that Part 1 didn't?
Okay. So, first of all, the biggest advantage is size, and ultimately the costlier, the bigger the plug, the more costly. At the moment, this is much more expensive than the old one because, I mean, they are being sold like 300 to 1, you know, this is just relatively not known. But if you look at the material and the use of copper and brass, it's very much reduced. So there's going to be a cost advantage here. On the safety issue, the problem with these flat face sockets is that on entry, when you put a plug in there, although you only have to make contact at a certain point, small fingers can get in there and they can touch live and neutral.
Yes.
So that's the main danger with a flat face socket, wherever it exists. In Italy, they also got flat face sockets. So the nice thing about a 164 Part 2 is that as it in, it's got a little well, 12 or 10 or 12 millimeter well, and as you insert the plug in the well, the pins disappear, and now you can't get anything in there, not even before you start touching the terminals. And on top of it, as a belt and braces, it's also got sleeves on the live and the neutral pits. So that's the main safety advantage. So this plug, the size, the cost, and of course the three-layer protection. The first layer is the shutter. So you can't put one pin in there. Sorry, I don't have one pin to demonstrate, but you cannot put a one pin inside one of these holes because it's got that little shutter. You've got to put two pins together for the shutter to open.
Interesting.
So that's a safety, big safety advantage of this type of plug and socket.
Okay. So those are the advantages.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, 164 Part 1, that's going to stick around. You can still buy the sockets. You can still buy the plugs. There's no plans to make either of those unlawful. Do you expect that the larger plugs are going to disappear at some point, say in 2 or 3 decades from now?
Yes, I think like all things, look in if we look at what happened in the UK when they introduced this plug, and I'm not sure if at the time it was mandatory. Knowing the UK, it probably wasn't. But now to buy a plug like this in the UK is quite costly. You know, these are now all over the place, so they're quite cheap. So there's going to be a sort of like an economic crossover at some point or another where the big plug compared to the new plug is at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So whether that will trigger people to change their socket outlets, I don't know. I think, look, in Europe, people refurbish their kitchens, their whole inside of their apartments quite regularly. South Africa, maybe not so.
Yeah.
You know, we rather buy a new place, you know. So in new places, and here also we must be careful, you know, we've got by far the biggest population we've got lives in a four-walled shack with barely a roof on top.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I mean, just to prevent them from wrapping wires around the pins and then sticking it into a socket is a huge educational effort. Mm. So you know, we mustn't forget that we've got a huge populace behind us that we've got to try and take into the next decades with us, you know. As it is, the shacks now have a ready board, which has been split into two. So one part is your where you buy your electricity, the other part has got a earth leakage protection, a light, and a socket. So now at least the shack owner, if he builds on a room, he can just extend the socket. He doesn't have to buy another ready board.
Yes.
And that's the problem. You know, we started off by giving them one light, one socket, three socket, but in one box. So guess what? They put the stove right underneath the socket outlet, the ready board, And that buggered up everything. You know, all that steam and all the oil got into the socket outlets. It was not a good idea.
Yeah.
So now the billing side, the buying of electricity sits separate from where the outlets are, the socket outlets are, and they are extendable.
Yes. Now, a lot of small appliances, cell phone chargers and all that sort of stuff ship with the two-prong adapter, but some of the bigger appliances like fridges, etc., have historically shipped with the SANS 164 Part 1 plug. Do you expect that appliance manufacturers, TV manufacturers, fridge manufacturers, etc., will start to ship their products with SANS 164 Part 2 plugs?
Yes. Look, we've tried. We've spoken to some of the associations, and they... they don't see an advantage at the moment. You know, they claim, look, there's not enough sockets in South Africa to warrant them bringing out a device with a 164 Part 2 plug, unless they put an adapter in there. Because if a person doesn't have the socket, then they'll bring the whole device back. Mm. So look, it's a very delicate sort of changeover. And remember, the two-pin plug is only a 2.5 amp device. This is a 2.5 amp device. This one is a 10 or 16 amp device. Mm. So there are very few appliances, and I'm talking about white goods now with metal chassis and frames that only require 2.5 amps. Mm. You know, it's a very low wattage. So at best, you would use this. This would probably do. So... but then it's unearthed, and an unearthed metal-clad appliance is not safe, because if you have any wires breaking off inside, the whole casing is live, and that's a killer.
Yes.
That's a killer.
Yeah, interesting. So it's a kind of a chicken and egg situation.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's it. And thank goodness we didn't make laws that killed the chicken, you know, and waited for the eggs to come out. You know, you've got to, yeah.
Yeah. Out of interest, do you think they're going to be adapters? And excuse me if this is a silly question, but do you think we're going to see a situation where there are adapters for 164 Part 1 to 164 Part 2?
Yes, they already exist. That's these adapters. These adapters are quite common. What you don't see is a 164 Part 2 adapter. In other words, this plug on the end.
And yes, that's what I meant. Sorry, I meant that way
around. Is that what you meant?
It is, yes.
Yeah. No, we've avoided that. And I think, thankfully, you know, the market has not done that. Look, it all fits together with the fact that there's not enough Part 2 sockets in circulation.
Mm.
But I dare say it's not illegal. It could happen. There's nothing that says you can't do that.
It would be a strange-looking adapter.
Yeah, look, we'll have to see when it does happen.
Yeah,
there's no point in putting a law now when there's, you know,
yeah,
like that HBO series with Chernobyl, where they said, well, why worry about something that's not going to happen? You remember, did you watch that series?
Fantastic, brilliant. I suppose one of the advantages of Part 2 is that, and moving to Part 2, is that we'd need to use adapters a lot less often than we do now.
Yes, that would be the point. And also 164 Part 2, which is different to 164 Part 1, is that there is a 2-pin version. So we have available a 2-pin unearthed 16 amp plug. Mm. Nobody has made one yet. It would fit into the same socket, because as I said, we're not changing the configuration of the pins, and you need 2 pins to open the shutter.
Yes.
So this socket can accommodate a 2-pin unearthed plug,
mm-hmm.
but not the other way around. In other words, this type of socket obviously cannot accommodate the 3-pin plug. So there's no way you can plug an earth device into an unearthed outlet.
Yes. Interesting. But a 16 amp 2-prong plug, are there any safety concerns given it's unearthed?
No. It depends on the double insulation of whatever it is. You know, I mean, you have various appliances that require maybe 10 amps, not quite 16 amps, but require 7.5 amps, 10 amps. And then you would have to go to a totally different socket design to accommodate that. So it would be nice that if you've got one standard, that you can have a plug with 2 pins and you could have any rating up to 16 amps.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the advantage going forward.
Yes.
As I said, nobody's made one yet. There hasn't been a call for it. But ultimately, you know, we've been caught in South Africa by both the cell phone manufacturers and the power tools manufacturers. And I don't know whether they conversed with one another, but independently, they went to SABS and said, look, we are standardizing on this plug. If you don't want it, then you better just cut it off and you put your own plug, because we're not going to make for a small community in Southern Africa special plugs.
Yeah.
So that's how the part two started. The part two started like that. Sorry, the part five. And shortly after that, power tool manufacturers came along and said, look, all our power tools around the world have got this plug.
Mm.
Why should we make, you know, 200,000-500,000 for South Africa with this huge plug on it? So take it or leave it. And that's where the SABS committees at that time decided to add these two standards. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would have just been 164.1, 164.2, and 164.3.
Right. Right. Interesting. So those, what are those plugs specifically that the cell phone manufacturers and the power tools companies? And
well, they're an EN50075, which is exactly this, 19 millimeters pin spacing, four and a half millimeter diameter. It's actually four. And it's all over the place. I mean, you know, there it is. There's a typical switch mode power supply. It's got exactly the same pins, exactly the same sort of trapezoid shape.
Mm.
And as I say, it fits into our standard socket. Our new standard socket will take that charger, no problem. So you don't need an adapter for two-pin outlet.
Yes.
And also the South African 164 part 2 socket allows for two different pin diameters. Our standard is 4.5. Our pins are all the same size and they're 4.5, but the 2.5 amp is 4. So in the test for this socket, you've got two different integrity gauges, in other words, contact pressure gauges, one at 4 millimeter and the other at 4.5. So it's quite safe at both. You remember when these outlets came out, people were using elastic bands and all sorts of things to hold the chargers in there.
Yes,
and that's because it was only designed for six millimeter. You know, it was designed for the original two pin. This also had a two pin version.
Yes.
So also not very popular, but it had a two pin version, looked like that, and that was what was made for. So when this came along with these tiny little pins, I mean, gee, you struggled, and people came up with ingenious ways of putting pressure on there, you know.
Mm.
Otherwise, you wake up in the morning and your phone's no better charge than it was the night you went to bed, you know. So
yeah, remember the.
So that's the behind the scenes work on these standards.
Yeah.
And the South African standard is quite significant. Or significantly different from the IEC 60906. In that, it's got a full set of gauges. It's got all the tests. It complies with the international 60884-1. So we've done a lot of work to make sure that this is a well-constructed series of plugs and sockets.
Now, Jean, you were part of a press conference that was held, I think, last week with the SABS.
Yes, at a media.
Yeah, yep. Where you spoke in some detail about the new standard. And now you mentioned something about a plan to make it impossible for plugs not to interfere with electrical switches. And I must say, I missed that part of the presentation somewhat.
Oh, okay.
What was that referring to? It was, I think you had a demonstration where the plug didn't go all the way in so that it would never interfere with the switch in the socket.
Yes. Yes. So what happens is it's not so much the plugs, but it's the adapters. This one does. You see, some manufacturers don't really look as to what they do in their products. And the products have, the 164.1 has what is called an exclusion zone. In other words, you've got an area where nothing must interfere with the entry up to that encroachment area.
Right.
So some manufacturers, by mistake or by design, they put a switch there.
Yes.
So what happens is you put a plug in, like an adapter like this, and it might make contact. And while it makes contact, it switches the switch and it hovers. The switch hovers. you'll see it's neither on nor off. So the little contact is kind of just touching. And, you know, you need a bit of contact pressure for there to be decent current flow without overheating.
Yes.
And that's caused some problems. Burnouts on the socket, burnout on the adapter or the plug. You know, the thing that melts it quickest, you know, creates the problem. So we introduced in the new standard an 8 millimeter gap between a socket whose shape is bigger than the encroachment zone on the socket outlet. So for instance, this socket, because it's bigger, it's got a bigger area than the encroachment zone, there should be a step, 8 millimeter step, so that when it plugs into the socket outlet, there's an 8 millimeter gap and the switch is unhindered. I'm just demonstrating now. I don't have one, reason being that this only comes into effect. There's a 12-month sunset clause. Some manufacturers have got until June 2021 to comply. So all socket outlet adapters or plugs that could interfere with switches, there's one. Mm-hmm. They will have to provide an 8 millimeter gap. In other words, keep the same length of plugs, but an 8 millimeter step between the face of the socket and the face of the socket outlet.
And will that?
So in other words, it's got to operate at that point.
Right, and that step will be made of plastic to prevent electrocution, will it?
It's there to prevent you from having an impeded device like a switch.
Sure, but because the adapter is going to be is not going to be flush with the socket.
No, it'll be flush. You won't be able to get to the pins because you've provided, in effect, I can't demonstrate it, but you've provided an 8 millimeter step around, no bigger than
I see. So the step is on the socket.
That's right. And then the pins stick out of that. Yeah.
I understand now. I thought there was going to be a gap where you could possibly get electrocuted, little fingers.
No. That stays as is. Okay. And unfortunately, socket outlet manufacturers who have not been mindful of this, they have to change the arrangement. So this particular socket can have one switch, but then it'll switch everything off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the new rule. Hence that table that I showed you, which is in 164 part zero.
Okay, and this is a requirement. This is not an option.
No, yeah, it's a requirement.
From next year.
So you don't have to put switches, but if you do, then you got to stick to the tape.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Okay, now can you buy adapters? I don't know what you call them, the ones that have multiple plugs, multi-plug adapters, I suppose you call them.
Yes, okay.
Can you buy those in retail now with a Part 2 standard sockets at this stage?
Well, I've only seen one company. I don't have it here. I've only seen one company that has come out with a multi-plug, in other words, a cord extension set.
Yes.
That has got 164 part 2, in other words, a 3-pin configuration. Mm-hmm. Most of them have only got the 2-pin, in other words, this design.
Yes.
And normally it's coupled to a 164 part 1, so you'll have a 1 and a 2 next to it, 1 and a 2, 1 and a 2, and then maybe a 164 part 6. So you get these complete, almost Meccano sets, except you don't put it together yourself. And now they come with USBs as well.
Yes.
So the standard for USBs in South Africa at the moment is also being looked at via the IEC, because they don't have a standard for USB connectors. They have standards for chargers, but a very complex standard. So a working group has been put together who's filtering down the requirements for typical USB that you have in socket outlets for fixed installations, etc.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at the moment, we've just got a safety requirement there, SANS 60950. It's a general safety requirement.
Do you think the industry should be doing more to promote 164 part 2?
Yes. Look, we're a bit disappointed that the white good appliance industry has been slow. You know, I think various companies have offered low-cost adapters just to get the 164 part 2 plug into the market. But, you know, we're all very anxious. Everybody wants to do things immediately, you know. But this is not a 90-minute game. This is really, it's going to take time. So we mustn't be too concerned. Eventually, consumers will get tired of having all these adapters. They don't last long as well. You know, they're cheap. I mean, some of these adapters are, I don't know, 10, 12 Rand. Now, you can't expect a decent electrical product for 10, 12 Rand. So I think people generally are quite, you know, they're quite upset. They also don't like going overseas and having to buy adapters. But, you know, again, there, you pay 2,500 Rand for the proper travel adapter, and you can go with this device around the world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, gee, it looks like a Swiss Army knife, you know.
I've seen those.
Have you seen those? Have you seen them?
I mean, they look dangerous.
Not really. Look, I mean, obviously, the people that are using them are not your 12-year-old kid with a or 10-year-old kid with a PlayStation. You know, these are serious things that travelers like yourself, and I attend meetings, IEC meetings, and I must say, S-Cross, which is a company that makes them, they talk about this all the time. Yeah. And their main worry is, okay, they got the Swiss Army knife, but it goes from 2.5 amps to 16 amps, you know. Now, how do you protect it? Well, good question. It's got a fuse inside. Yeah. But when that fuse pops, you throw a 2,500 Rand device away. You know what I mean? It doesn't go down too well. But then people that travel, you know, they have an intent, a purpose. So if you're going there with your notebook and your media stuff, you know what current ratings you require, you know, you don't have to guess, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a really fascinating discussion. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm sure our audience has as well. John Campetti, thank you so much for sharing your expert knowledge with TechCentral.
It's a pleasure. Really appreciate it. A pleasure. Thank you again.